We are living through what is likely one day to be known as the most prosperous time the earth has ever known. We're also living during the most technologically advanced society the world has ever known. And yet, we tend to, because our perspective is so limited, we tend to take this prosperity and this advanced technology for granted. If we think that the wealth we now enjoy as a nation, and of course there's some diminishment of that wealth lately, I'll be talking about that later, but if we think the wealth we still enjoy is the way things have always been, we need to think again. I've shared this with you in the past from The Economist. They had a millennium special issue in the year. The actual date of the article was December 31st, 1999, of course, anticipating the year 2000. And it was called The Road to Riches. And I have shared this before, but I think it's good to share it again. The Economist noted, the magazine, for nearly all of human history, economic advance has been so slow as to be imperceptible within the span of a lifetime. If you take the whole time man's been on earth, the economic advance has been so slow as to be imperceptible within the span of a lifetime. For century after century, the annual rate of economic growth was, to one place of zeros, zero. Or to one place of decimal, zero. When growth did happen, you take the whole history of man, when growth did happen, it was so slow as to be invisible to contemporaries. And even in retrospect, it appears not as rising living standards, which is what growth means today, merely as a gentle rise in population. It's got a little bit bigger and so a little bit more prosperity. Down the millennia, progress for all but a tiny elite amounted to this. It slowly became possible for more people to live at the meanest level of existence. From about 1750, this iron law of history was broken. Growth began to be no longer invisibly slow nor confined, as it largely had been before, to farming. The new increase in human productivity was staggeringly large. It not only supported a hitherto unimaginable 72-fold rise in the world's population went up 72 times, but entirely transformed the lives of ordinary people throughout the West. The surge of growth was due to industrialization. Thanks to it, material prosperity has risen in more in the last 250 years than it had in the past 10,000 years. And so conditioned to growth have people become that most Westerners now expect their standard of living to improve automatically year by year. If it does not, something's wrong. This taking of granted what would once have seemed miraculous is the measure of the change. Now, the article was written 13 years ago. And things have changed a little bit in that time, has it not? The article was followed by a chart of gross domestic product per person in Western Europe. From year one, if there was such a year one, to the year 2000. And they calculated it at 1990 prices. All right, so year one to 2000, two millennia, the gross domestic product. From year one to year 1500, the gross domestic product increase was virtually flat. In 1990 prices, it averaged $300 per person per year. How would you like to live on $300 a year? It would change a lot of things, wouldn't it? There was a slight rise from 1500 to 1830. And in 1830, gross domestic product per person in Western Europe was $650 annually. From 1830 to 1900, it jumped to $3,600 per person in Western Europe, the gross domestic product. Instead of $300 a year, as we started off, it's now $300 a month, which is enormous growth. From 1950, when the gross domestic product per person on the face of the earth was $6,000, the chart goes almost immediately up in those 50 years to the year 2000. And in 2000, the gross domestic product in Western Europe per person was $18,000. And it was just in that last 50 years that it shot up so high. Then the article went on to discuss how this happened and why. Of course, we have a different view of that. The Church of God knows that God's promises to bless the house of Israel was withheld for 2,520 years. The house of Israel went into captivity somewhere around 721 to 718 before Christ, or before the Christian era. And you add 2,520 years to that, and you get the years 1800 to 1803. And Britain, in 1803, started to become an empire and had possessions all over the earth. America began to add territories and states. And you find out how many states came into the Union in 1800 to 1803. And around that time, it just began to start adding in, start growing. And it started expanding. America did from, as the song says, from sea to shining sea. And together, these nations would gradually come to possess two-thirds of the world's wealth. Two-thirds. And all the sea gates and all the land gates were under their control. Now, we know prosperity came not from human endeavor, but because of God's blessing. If you look at Genesis 49... Genesis chapter 49. This is Jacob speaking of his son who was kept from him by fraud most of his life. And this is Genesis 49 and verse 22. And here is Jacob giving prophecies of what would befall his 12 sons in the latter times. He said, Genesis 49, verse 22, Joseph, and of course Joseph is the father of Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. A well means there's water available, so the bough will thrive. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hand were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father, Jacob is speaking of himself to Joseph. By the God of your father, that's Jacob, who will help you with the Almighty, who will bless you with blessings of the heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies under the beneath, that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, population growth. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors, excelled the blessings of Abraham and Isaac. Up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills, they shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. He had been separated from his brothers. And it's interesting, Jacob realized that he was separate. And even now, geographically, Joseph is separate from his brothers. There's a certain closeness, but We're over here. We got, you know, oceans on both sides, and it's amazing how that goes. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 33. Moses, when he, at the end of his life and the end of his mission, he also prophesied about what would happen to the 12 tribes. And it's slightly different, especially for the tribe of Aaron, tribe of Levi. But in Deuteronomy chapter 33, I'm in 32, and verse 13. Deuteronomy chapter 33 and verse 13. And of Joseph he, Moses, said, "Blessed of the Lord is his land, with the precious things of the heaven, with the deep and with the dew." And with dew, you know, means prosperity, lots of water. "And the deep lying beneath, with the precious fruits of the sun, with the precious produce of the months, with the best things of the ancient mountains, with the precious things of the everlasting hills, with the precious things of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwells in the bush." Favor among tribal peoples who dwell in difficult circumstances. "Let the blessing come on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him who is separate from his brothers." Again, that reference to separate from his brothers. "His glory is like a firstborn bull, and his horns like the horns of a wild ox. Together with them he shall push the peoples to the end of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and there are the thousands of Manasseh." This seems to indicate that in the long run there'll be more Ephraimites than there are Manassehites. Right now it doesn't look that way, but I'm sure what God said is right, and we'll see how it all works out. But God also warned not only Joseph, but all the other tribes, that prosperity can lead to many problems. Now look at Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8 will begin in verse 7. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 7. "For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water." There weren't brooks of water in Egypt. "Of fountains and springs." There weren't fountains and springs in Egypt. There was the Nile. "That flow out of valleys and hills because of rain." There was not much rain in Egypt. "A land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates. A land of olive oil and honey." You ever go into some of these big mega marts and you look around and you think, this is astonishing. And it's just one of hundreds and thousands of them across the country. I mean, you want olive oil? They can give you racks of it. You want honey? It's unbelievable. Verse 9, "A land in which you will eat bread without scarcity." That was new to them. "In which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And when you've eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, his statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions." We once had a scorpion in our house in South Africa. Get your attention. "And scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gained me this wealth. Oh, yeah, I did it. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth. That's a great lesson in understanding. It's God who gives power to gain wealth or to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. God's got to fulfill what he promised. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so shall you perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. That's pretty strong stuff, is it not? That's pretty strong, pretty straightforward teaching. When prosperity increases, it's a tendency for humans to forget God. They think their wealth comes because of their power, because of their wealth or their position of strength or might or military force or other things. We think that's the one that gives us prosperity, and we've forgotten God. And the results are going to be there. Look at Deuteronomy 31. Before Moses' death and at the end of this mighty book of Deuteronomy, God gave some instruction to Moses, which he of course, carried out. Deuteronomy 31, verse 28. Moses said, gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing, and call heaven and earth to witness against them. Those are God's twin witnesses, the heaven and the earth. For I know that after my death you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. And I think we all think those are pretty close, if not upon us, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the works of your hands, through what you do. Well, this goes on with the whole Deuteronomy 32 is one book called the Song of Moses in the subject heading there. But let's go down to verse 10 of Deuteronomy 32. Verse 10. Deuteronomy 32, verse 10. He found him in a desert land and found him in a wasteland, a howling wilderness. He encircled him. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its young, spreading out its wings, taking them up, carrying them on its wings. So the Lord alone led him, and there was no foreign god with him. He made him ride in the heights of the earth, that he might eat the produce of the fields. He made him draw honey from the rock and oil from the flinty rock. Don't we call that fracking? Verse 14. Curds from the cattle and milk from the flock, with fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats and the choicest wheat. You drank wine, the blood of the grapes. But Yehoshuan, that's another name for Israel, grew fat and kicked. You grew fat. You grew thick. You are obese. Then he forgot God who made him and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with foreign gods. With abominations, they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons, not to God, to gods they did not know, to new gods, new arrivals that your fathers did not fear. Of the rock who begot you, you are unmindful. You have forgotten the God who fathered you. And when the Lord saw it, he spurned them because of the provocations of his sons and daughters. And he said, I will hide my face for them, and I will see what their end will be. I'll just back away, and then they can go their own way. Verse 23, he said, backing away only temporarily, I will heap disasters on them. You know the news where fires here and floods there, and it's just one thing after another. Plane crashes, diseases, it's just unbelievable. I will heap disasters on them. I will spend my arrows on them. They shall be wasted with hunger, devoured by pestilence and bitter destruction. I will also send against them the teeth of beasts with the poison of serpents of the dust. The sword will destroy outside, There shall be terror within, for the young man and the virgin, the nursing child, with the man of gray hairs. I'll go on down. And the whole chapter is instructive, but it just gives you an idea. As Israel turned away from God, he sent his prophets to warn them and to tell them this isn't good. We need to change. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah, the fifth chapter. Jeremiah 5 and verse 1. Run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. See now and know, and seek in her open places. If you can find a man, if there's anyone who exercises judgment, who speaks the truth, and I will pardon her. If you can find anybody that speaks the truth. Though they say, as the Lord lives, surely they swear falsely. O Lord, are not your eyes on the truth? You have stricken them, but they have not grieved. You have consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than rock. They have refused to return. Return to God, of course. Therefore I said, surely these are the poor. They are foolish, for they do not know the way of the Lord. The judgment of their God. They don't know the way of the Lord, the judgment of their God. I will go to the great men and speak to them, for they know the way of the Lord. They know the judgment of God. Because these have altogether broken the yoke and burst the bonds. Therefore a lion from the forest shall slay them, and a wolf of the desert shall destroy them. The leopard will watch over. Remember, these are also nations. A leopard will watch over their cities. Everyone who goes out from there shall be torn in pieces, because their transgressions are many, their backslidings have increased. How shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me, and sworn by those that are not gods. When I fed them to the full, they committed adultery, and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. They were like well-fed, lusty stallions. Each one neighed after his neighbor's wife. Shall I not punish them for these things, says the Lord? And shall I not avenge myself on such a nation as this? Of course, other nations do the same thing. When they're prosperous, they tend to get frisky. But they don't have a covenant with God. God's people have a covenant with God. Look at the book of Hosea, which is addressed more to the house of Israel. The book of Hosea. Daniel, Hosea. Hosea, chapter 4 and verse 1. Hosea, chapter 4 and verse 1. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel. And that applies more to Ephraim and Manasseh than the other. It applies to all the tribes, but particularly to Ephraim and Manasseh. For the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. What a statement. No truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying, killing and stealing, and committing adultery, they break all restraint. With bloodshed upon bloodshed. The image of people shedding blood so much that the pools of blood run into each other is the picture that's given here. Therefore the land will mourn, and everyone who dwells there will waste away, and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air, even the fish of the sea, will be taken away. Now let no man contend or rebuke another. Don't start criticizing each other. For your people are like those who contend with the priest, or who argue with the priest. Therefore they shall be stubble in the day. The prophet also shall stumble with you in the night, and I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Our people do not know God. They do not know his principles. And they're turning further and further from him. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being a priest. He's particularly concerned about the priests. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, and the priest should remember that, I will forget your children. The more they increased, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. You know, the United States, when I first started traveling overseas, had a certain glory, a certain respect. It's disappearing fast, if it's not gone. I will change their glory into shame. oh, yeah, that's the country where you do this and where you do that. They eat up the sin of my people. They set their heart on their iniquity. going on down, I'll skip down to verse 7. The more they increase, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. They eat up the sin of my people. They set their heart on iniquity. It shall be like people, like priests. So I'll punish them for their ways and reward them for their deeds. For they shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit harlotry, but not increase. What's happening to the population of the United States now among those who we would think would be the children of Israel? It's decreasing. Not just as a percentage, but also as a whole number. They shall commit harlotry, a lot of sex going on, but not increase, because they have ceased to obey the Lord. Harlotry, wine, and new wine enslave the heart. My people ask counsels from their wooden idols, and their staff informs them. For the spirit of harlotry has caused them to stray. There is in the United States today a spirit of harlotry. I don't think anybody would argue with that. Has caused them to stray, and they have played the harlot against their God, spiritually as well. They offer sacrifices on the mountains and burn incense on the hills under oaks, poplars, and terebinth because their shade is good. Therefore, your daughters commit adultery and your brides commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they commit adultery, nor your brides when they commit adultery. For the men themselves go apart with harlots and sacrifice with ritual harlot. The people who do not understand will be trampled. And he goes on down there. They break all restraint. A holy people practices self-discipline. An unholy people follows human lusts. God gave us appetites. He gave us guidelines on the best way to use them. We're to enjoy food. It's good. It's a wonderful blessing. There are scriptures that say that. But not gluttony. To enjoy drink, but avoid drunkenness. Enjoy sexual relations, but only in marriage. Enjoy possessions, but avoid greed, selfishness, and of course theft. Enjoy speech, friendships, human relationships, but avoid hatred, gossip, and slander. Enjoy thinking and creating. What a blessing that is. But avoid vanity and pride and malice. It's just very sad the way things have been going in the last few years. And I'm sure the older people see it and lament more than the younger, because the younger, it's in there and it's just the way it is. It's a very sad thing. Look at Hosea 13. Hosea 13. And verse 4. Hosea 13 and verse 4. Yet I am the Lord your God ever since the land of Egypt, and you should know no God, you shall know no God but me, for there is no Savior besides me. I knew you in the wilderness, in the land of great drought, when they had pasture, they were filled. They were filled and their heart was exalted. Therefore they forgot me. For I'll be like them, like a lion, like a leopard on a road by the lurk. I will lurk. I will meet them like a bear. Isn't that interesting? Those are all the Gentile kingdoms. A lion, a leopard, and a bear. And deprived of her cubs, I will tear open their rib cage, and there I will devour them like a lion. I think he's speaking of the whole nation, maybe some individuals. I don't know. The wild beast shall tear them. O Israel, he said... I won't go on with that. Just the prosperity that got them, it trapped them. And notice also, if you would, Ezekiel 16. I think you know this verse, or these verses, but just in case, let's review them, because what went wrong in Sodom? What was the problem there? Ezekiel 16, and let's begin in verse 44. Ezekiel 16, 44. I'm trying to repeat the scriptures more often because the online guys tell me, please repeat the scriptures more often. Ezekiel 16, verse 44. Indeed, everyone who quotes Proverbs will use this problem against you, like mother, like daughter. In the update yesterday, I mentioned apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. It's a similar thing. You are your mother's daughter. loathing husband and children. And you are the sister of your sisters who loathe their husbands and children. Your mother was a Hittite and your father was an Amorite. He's speaking of their way of life. And your elder sister is Samaria, who dwells with her daughters to the north of you. And your sisters, who dwell to the south of you, Sodom and her daughters. You did not walk in their ways nor act according to their abominations, but, as if it were too little, you became more corrupt than they in all your ways. As I live, says the Lord, neither your sister Sodom nor her daughters have done as you and your daughters have done. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. Here's what got Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, fullness of food. They weren't hungry. And abundance of idleness. Doesn't that describe America today? Proud, fullness of food, abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty, and they committed abominations before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw fit, says the Lord. Samaria did not commit half your sins, but you have multiplied your abominations more than they, and you have justified your sisters by all the abomination which you have done. You who judged your sisters, bear your own shame also, because the sins which you committed were more abominable than theirs. They are more righteous than you. Yes, be disgraced also, and bear your own shame, because you have justified your sisters. You made them look good. You know, it's really an amazing thing. You know, Matthew 24, let's do that. We know it pretty well, but just to get I think we know it pretty well. Sometimes people say, I'll say, well, I think we know that pretty well, so I won't cover it. And they say, wait a minute, I don't think we know it as well as you think we do. So I'll listen to that advice. Matthew 24 and verse 3, and I went over these three chapters, 24, 25, 23, 24, and 25, and I see them in a much more clear way than I ever have before. And I'm hoping to go over that here with the congregation here as time goes on. Matthew 24, verse 3, and as he sat in the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. This is private instruction, saying, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceive you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of war. What's the news about lately? How about wars and rumors of wars? See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So this is the beginning of the end, but it's not the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Nation means one ethnic group. The word is ethnos. Will be against another ethnic group. And that's what you see in the Middle East and what you see all over the earth. One ethnos against another. And nation, our political kingdoms, are groupings of nations against kingdom. And there'll be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of the sorrows. He goes on with that. Then verse 36, let's skip down. Won't go over in detail today. But of that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. For as the days of Noah were, so also the coming of the Son of Man shall be. The society that's around when Christ returns will be like the one that was around in the days of Noah. And you know what happened in the days of Noah. For as the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. Eating and drinking. Famines in certain places, but still great prosperity in other places. Perhaps the land of Joseph, I don't know. And as I mentioned, since AD 1 AD, prosperity has been very rare. And marrying and giving in marriage. When people are prosperous, as I said, they tend to get frisky. Divorce is rare during tough times like the Depression. There's less time or inclination to fool around or act foolishly. Everybody had to work together to survive. The hardships of the Depression affected the people the rest of their lives. Evelyn's mom and dad and other people we know of that generation, it affected them forever. Even when they were prosperous, they couldn't spend money. It had been so traumatic that they had to save everything and be sure, be careful, and not do anything foolish. It just really affected them. we, for the last 50 years, have been happy, 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 prosperous. We've been living it up, and we don't know much. And America's a thought to not say very much today. But when prosperous, tendency to harlotry and wine and new wine to enslave the heart. He goes on, he said, they will be marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, the very minute, and did not know until the flood came. They couldn't be warned of it. They had to see it. And did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will the coming of the Son of Man will be. And he says, verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. Today we're seeing many indications of America's decline. I think you'll all agree that we're seeing America economic decline. And in some ways, the United States is kind of on the same path that Detroit was on. There's a strong similarity there. We are officially $17 trillion in debt. Actually, others say it's much higher than that. But anyway, officially $17 trillion in debt. And just like Detroit, the government keeps on spending. I understand that the last several years, Detroit was spending $100 million more than it brought in. Now there's a way to financial security. And America's doing the same thing. We now have 47 million people reserving food stamps. It's an all-time high. Now, I'm sure a number of those people, perhaps a significant percentage, are truly needy, and it is a helpful program. But on the other hand, the way it's just grown exponentially, there are others who are concerned that it's merely being used as another form of welfare. David Sullen sent me a note recently about America's park rangers, comparing two facts. America's park rangers tell those visitors of the park, don't feed the animals. It makes them dependent. And at the same time, other parts of the government are saying, push out the welfare, go to the food stamps, push it out, push it out, push it out, push it out. It's with little concern about whether they're dependent or not. When he sent the note, I said, I think they know that animals don't vote. And when you put all the food assistance programs together, and food stamps is only one, there are many others, I don't know how many. I read stats that there are more people receiving free meals, such as school lunches and things along this line. That when you put it all together, it's over 100 million people. That's bad enough until you hear it's even worse because how many people are employed in the United States? 97 million. There are more people receiving food subsidies than are actually working. Entitlement spending is growing quickly. Reminds you of Detroit not too many years ago. Did you know that so far this year, 484 U.S. firms worth almost $44 billion have been acquired by foreign interests? 484 U.S. firms have been acquired by foreign interests so far this year. We're just a little over half. Why? Well, each one would have its own individual reasons, but one general reason is thought to be because U.S. business taxes are the highest in the world. In 1986, when the U.S. last cut business taxes, of the 500 largest corporations by revenue on the face of the earth, 218 were American firms. Today, it's only 137. Foreign interests can buy our companies, move their accounting center back to their home country where business taxes are lower. And the tax difference gives them an advantage, a big advantage. I read another article. There was a lady said, who was living overseas. She said, suppose you were, now I have been involved in foreign taxes living overseas. And you might like to know, when I was transferred back here from Australia in 1990, was it that long ago? because I had been a signatory on an overseas account, Pasadena wanted to fill out my tax so be sure I didn't make a mistake. Because when you've been on a foreign account for 10 years, they look after you. See if they can tax you. So they wanted to do it, and they offered to pay for it, so I get the best tax advice for 10 years, which I did, that they, the Worldwide Church of God, didn't get in trouble because I made some dumb blunder. They thought it through. Don't let him do it. So there's a lady who says, now suppose you were born in the state of California, and when you were little, you moved to some other state. Suppose then when you started earning money in that state, California says, well, you were born here, therefore we should tax your income, as well as the tax you're paying in another state. And then you move to a third state, and then California still claims that they can tax you, and they can tax your children because you were born in California. That's not what California does, but it is what the USA does. If you're a U.S. citizen overseas, they say you can tax you. And so I had to fill out both American and foreign taxes and pay the least, I think. So at that time, I don't know what it is now. U.S. taxes are in a problem, especially internationally. And companies now don't want to send Americans overseas, because if they open a bank account for an American, the U.S. IRS can go after them. And you know how reliable the IRS is. But if they have an American account, the IRS will claim authority to look at that account and check it. So they say, we're not going to give Americans accounts. Avoid the liability. Is there any wonder in the last 4 or 5 years, actual American take-home pay has been reported to have declined 3% in the last 4 or 5 years? Americans have less income than they did before on average. Have you noticed a gallon of gas costs more this summer? No, nobody noticed that. Why is it? Greedy oil companies? I got a surprise for you. How about the price gas companies are required to pay for ethanol? In 2007, under President Bush, Congress and President Bush mandated how much ethanol companies must purchase. Now, that's a good American freedom of enterprise, isn't it? We got to tell you how much you got to buy of ethanol. And they set it in the year 2013 at 13.8 billion gallons. You must buy this, you oil companies. The figure was based on the expectation that annual increases in gas production would keep going up. The problem is annual gas consumption is not going up. With the recession, folks driving more efficient cars, gas use has fallen. But the mandate says you got to buy $13.8 billion. So the gas producers are now forced to pay penalties, because if they bought all that, they'd have too much ethanol in the tank. It'd be more than 10%. Customers would complain, wouldn't buy their gas. So they're now forced to pay penalties for the ethanol they don't use. In January of this year, the penalty per gallon was 10 cents. In March of this year, the penalty per gallon was a dollar. In July, the penalty's $1.40. It's just going up exponentially, supply and demand, $1.40. So today's Wall Street Journal said, the quickest way for Washington to lower prices would be to repeal the ethanol quotas. But White House Energy Advisor Heather Zickel said this week that repeal would be short-sighted because the mandate combats climate change. Sure it does. But even environmentalists, including Al Gore, now concede that ethanol probably increases carbon emissions. You got to go to the corn before you can stick it in the tank, and that takes all the carbon. The ethanol quota is scheduled to rise again in 2014, and many energy experts expect this could add another 10 to 25 cents per gallon to gas. And they end their article, they say, only Washington can come up with such a scheme. Because they mandated buying ethanol and penalties these companies if you don't. These guys aren't free. They're regulated like crazy. I also read a suggestion in the paper this morning that the government could easily bail out Detroit. Detroit needs about $20 billion to pay its bills. Mr. Bernanke is printing $85 billion a month. So if this 1 month they took 25 of the 85 and gave it to Detroit, the problem would be solved. Hey! On the surface, that sounds like a good solution. And it may yet happen, sadly. But a few moments' thought reveals the foolishness of that idea. There are a number of states, and you're living in one of them, that's said to be the most indebted state in the nation, that are hopelessly in debt. So if Bernanke bails out Detroit, he'll have to bail out Illinois, California, New York, and the many other states who are in debt. And let's remember, Detroit's a city. How many other cities are over their head in debt? It could be thousands. It probably is thousands. The problem is called moral hazard, and all members need to know what moral hazard is. That's when you boil out foolish or unwise behavior. When you do that, you get more foolish and unwise behavior. If you bail out Detroit, and Cleveland's going to come and say, hey, we have problems with our debt too. And before you know it, everybody else is just asking to be bailed out. Moral hazard. You subsidize foolish or unwise behavior, and you'll get more of it. America's economic problems are cause for concern, but the situation internationally is also concerning. America no longer enjoys the respect among nations that it once did. Russian President Putin does not fear showing disrespect to the U.S. In fact, he almost apologized for showing America respect by requiring Ed Snowden to cease disclosing U.S. secrets if he got him, granted him asylum. He said, my Russian people will think that's strange of me to require that. Because if it's hurting America, well, it should be good, right? But he knows. He's a former KGB. He doesn't want people disclosing secrets. Make no mistake. Mr. Putin sees himself in the driver's seat, and he knows America's leaders are not. We spend billions, probably trillions, to bring democracy to Iraq and Afghanistan. What did we actually accomplish? It's beginning to look like we didn't accomplish anything. Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Syria, China, North Korea, even Egypt and Libya feel free to show disrespect or ignore U.S. opinion with no fear of consequences. America's call for changes in behavior in these countries and other countries appear to carry zero weight. On a slightly different bent, I recently read a book report on Seth Cropsey's, it's Crop, S-E-Y, new book, Mayday. Do you know the word Mayday? Mayday is the international distress signal call for ships and at the sea. Mayday, Mayday. The book's name is Mayday, and this guy is an authority on the U.S. Navy. Most people are unaware that national greatness depends on naval power. They think it depends on military power. Military power is secondary. Primary is naval power. Naval power is the underpinning of national power. The British Empire dominated the seas, which gave them control of commerce. And 90% of commerce is over the seas. They also control the gates of their enemies. Trade depends on free access to those gates. If you've got the strongest ship in the world and you have to sail through a little gate, they can shoot you with a rifle. Well, maybe a big rifle. But you're an easy target when you're sitting, you know, a couple hundred feet from land. It used to be said, Britannia rules the waves. When I was in Brickett Wood in the 60s, the wags used to say, Britannia waves the rules. And so they do. And their navy is virtually non-existent. I think they have an aircraft carrier, but it's in dock. They can't afford it. It's the ethanol they have to put in the gas. No, just kidding. Since World War II, America has replaced Britain as a superior naval power that permits free international trade and therefore international peace. You can send an aircraft carrier anywhere on the seas, and you got a power there that's just astonishing. That's unbelievable. But America's Navy is said to be in decline. This article, the book report said, how we lost the seas. The last transfer of sea power was between nations, Great Britain and the U.S., that shared political values and commercial philosophies and saw eye to eye on freedom of navigation in international waters. It was a seamless transition for the international order at the time. What will be the effect among our allies and like-minded partners should U.S. sea power wane, our global naval presence diminish, and China replace the U.S. as the guarantor of international commerce and maritime security? As Mr. Cosby said, the signs point to a change of power in the Western Pacific, a region of great importance to our future prosperity. In a paragraph, with its 286 ships, the U.S. Navy is now smaller than it was in 1917 when it boasted 342 ships. I think, to be fair, though, you have to say an aircraft carrier is a lot bigger than any one ship that was ever or more powerful than any one ship in 1917. So these ships are much more powerful. But still, the number is going down. The number is stuck, and the trend spans the administration of both parties. We have spent heavily on our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the U.S. Navy, which is central to our long-term strategic interests, languishes. Navies, unlike armies, take time to build. Notice this. When the framers of our Constitution wrote of this imperative to provide and maintain a navy, as to the need to raise and support an army. In other words, the Navy has to be a permanent presence, and the Army can go up or go down depending on the needs, at least in that time's thinking. To provide and maintain a Navy, as opposed to the need to raise and support an army. You have to understand, sea power is the key to national power, not military power. Because if you can't get your military to where the battle is, you're finished. Our Navy is still extremely strong. As I understand it, we have 10 aircraft carrier groups. Nobody is coming close. China's talking about getting their first one. 10's pretty big. But the trends go in the wrong direction. Look at Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 are two chapters that talk about the troubles that would come if Israel did not follow God's ways. Leviticus 26. And beginning in verse 15, Leviticus 26, verse 14. But if you do not obey me, the first 13 verses are what will happen if you do follow God's way. And we ought to be familiar with those. But verse 14, he says, but if you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes and your soul upholds my judgments, so that you do not perform all my commandments, but break my covenant. See, he was in a covenant with these people. With America, it's a little different. I will also do this to you. I will even appoint terror over you. Did you notice terror is the first word? Now, terrorism is a big problem. But we got terrors in our cities. We got terrors of various kinds, of the IRS coming after you when you're innocent. I will appoint terror over you, wasting disease and fever, which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you will sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. After all this, if you do not obey me, then I will punish you 7 more times for your sins. I will break the pride of your power. You have power, but you won't have the will to use it. I will break the pride of your power. I will make your heavens like iron and your earth like bronze, and your strength shall be spent in vain. What did we spend in Iraq? 100 million, 100 billion, trillion? it's spent in vain. And we're going to have a stimulus. We're going to stimulate the economy. It was spent, but what did it stimulate? And yet they're afraid to stop it. This is a personal opinion. I suspect that stimulus spending will one day be perceived as bloodletting. That it sounds like it's going to help the patient, and it's intended to help the patient, but in fact it makes it weaker. That's just my opinion. It's worth everything you paid for it. And your strength shall be spent in vain, and your land shall not yield its produce, nor the trees of the land its fruit. And he goes on. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. And let's look at just a few verses. Both chapters are much longer on what will happen if you don't obey God than they are on what if you do. But we should be familiar with them, and there's some pretty scary things because they did happen exactly as God said. Twice. Deuteronomy 28, verse 15. But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God and observe all his commandments and his statutes which I command you today, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city. And we know how Chicagoans in the suburb love the idea of going into the city. They just love it. They can hardly wait to get to the city, right? Cursed shall you be in a city, and cursed shall you be in the country. Oh, there's no place. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and offspring of your flocks. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. He said, the Lord will send upon you cursing, confusion, and rebuke in all that you set your hand to do until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doing in which you have forsaken me. The Lord will make a plague cling to you until he has consumed you from the land which you are going to possess. The Lord will strike you with consumption, with fever, and with inflammation, and with severe burning fever, with a sword, and with scorching, and mildew. And they shall pursue you until you perish. And your heavens above shall be like bronze, and your earth like iron. Remember, it's the opposite of Leviticus. But an iron-covered heaven isn't good, and a bronze-covered heaven is good. And an iron-covered land isn't good. Green's better. And bronze isn't, I remember Bob Dick saying about it once. He was at a place, the farms were so bad, the only thing green in the field was the John Deere tractor. He said, the Lord will change the rain on your land to powder and dust from the heaven it shall come down until you are destroyed. And he goes on with that sober thing. Sobering warning there. Well, let's go to verse 36. And you shall become an astonishment, a proverb and a byword among all the nations where the Lord will drive you. And you shall carry much seed out to the field and gather little in, for the locusts shall consume it. You shall plant vineyards and tend them, but you will neither drink the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them. You'll have olive trees throughout your territory, but you shall not anoint yourself with the oil, for your olives shall drop off. And you shall beget sons and daughters, but they shall not be yours, for they shall go into captivity. Locusts shall consume all your land and the produce of your land. The alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. And they shall be upon you for a sign and a wonder and on your descendants forever because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and gladness of heart for the abundance of everything. Surely we should serve God with joy and abundance of heart for the abundance of everything. Therefore you shall serve, because you did not serve in that way, therefore you shall serve your enemies, whom the Lord will send against you in hunger and thirst and nakedness and in need of everything. And he'll put a yoke of iron on your neck until he's destroyed you. That's very strong language, brethren. And it's God, so you know it means absolutely what he says. As I mentioned at the beginning, I would like all of us to focus on the unique time in history in which we live. We are living through what is likely to be known as the most prosperous time the earth has ever known. And also the most technologically advanced society the world has ever known. And we tend to take this prosperity and technology for granted. If we think the wealth we now enjoy is the way things will always be, we need to think again. If we think it's the way it's always been, that's wrong. And if we think it'll go on forever, that's also wrong. We need to think again. Have a look at Romans 13. This seems very appropriate here. Romans 13 and verse 11. Romans 13. And this could apply in many circumstances, but I feel it applies very well in the one we're discussing today. Romans 13 and verse 11. And do this, knowing the time, that it's high time to awake out of sleep. If we think this prosperity is going to go on, we're kidding ourselves. I don't know how long, but it's not going to go on forever. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Whenever you started in the church, salvation is closer now, by decades in some cases. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Light is a protector. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ. We have to become like him and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust. We live in prosperous times. How long they'll last, I don't know, but we need to be aware that it's temporary.